What's going on, Street Cop fam? I'm Frankie Rodriguez. I'm the podcast producer for the Street Cop podcast. Unfortunately, on this episode, you'll notice that our audio on our end, we had some technical difficulties. It doesn't sound the best. However, after discussing with Dennis, we wouldn't want to keep this episode from you guys. It's a really impactful episode with a lot of great information and nuggets and an important message. So thank you guys all for your continued support. And again, our apologies for the technical difficulties. We hope you enjoy the episode and thank you for your support.
I know there's this misnomer when you start looking at Instagram and Facebook that policing is dead in Chicago. It's the complete opposite from my personal experience. We're out there every single night getting in vehicle pursuits, getting armed offenders, carjacking, shootings, homicides, stolen vehicles, all this stuff off the street. And the big thing that we're doing is utilizing like the LPR technology to locate these vehicles that have been identified in serious felony crimes and then using the aircraft to track it. 111-110.
Street Cop. Hey guys, welcome to this episode of Street Cop Training Podcast. Mule's founder and CEO of Street Cop Training. My name is Dennis Benito, and I have with us today Matt Zolka, who's a longtime friend of mine, and John Gray, who I just met 5 minutes ago, and his sister is not Sasha. We've established that. There's no relation, and neither of them have claimed to see that person in the performance of their duties ever. But they are from the Hangar podcast.
Hangar Z podcast.
Hangar Z. Sorry, dude. My apologies. The logo's fantastic. I just didn't see the Z. Now it's all like coming to me. I'm like, oh, that makes sense.
Hey, we just met 5 minutes ago, so it's cool.
Anywho, we thought it'd be a really good idea. These guys have a lot of cool shit to talk about regarding aviations and law enforcement. We've got a lot of good chemistry to start. It's going to be a good podcast. So thanks, boys, for being here. Matt, known each other for quite some years. I've had many aviation questions for Matt because you flew commercial before you became a cop, right?
That's correct, yeah. So after we did that training when you came to Chicago, literally a week before COVID started, you know, it was like March 3rd or something like that, 2020, you were calling me up about questions about, hey, what happened with this flight or what was this? Because you're a nervous flyer and I was trying to calm your nerves a little bit with that stuff.
I will have you know, dude, that I am a enthusiastic flyer now, and I'd like to actually learn how to fly. I'm fucking love it, dude. I was telling Kenny Williams, you know who he is, right? You posted Kenny too.
He's one state over. Like, so, yeah.
This morning we're flying out to Newport. We got to go to LA tomorrow. We have a business event out there for 3 days, and so I'm telling him like, yeah, no, I'm flying on a 787 Airbus. I'm like, I'm not Airbus, I'm the Dreamliner, 787 Dreamliner. And I was like, he's like, dude, how are you so excited about being on a plane? I'm like, well, I picked the Dreamliner just because. Out of the 10 flights that are going from Newark to LA tomorrow, the Dreamliner was the only one available. And I'm like explaining everything to him, how it works. And I'm like, dude, they're just so much fun to be on because they're so fucking, I love them.
What has the word dream in it? So it's got to be good.
Yeah.
Anyway, let's go. John, tell us about you. And then Matt, we'll go back to you and you can tell us about you, what you do.
So I just retired from the Ontario Police Department in Southern California. Unfortunately, it was a medical retirement. But man, I had a really cool career. 18 years in law enforcement, 7 years prior to that as a firefighter. Paid my way through college working for the U.S. Forest Service. Did a short stint. Well, it was about 4 years for a local fire department as a part-time guy. And that's what kind of paved the way for me to go work for the U.S. Forest Service there. After college, made the jump over to law enforcement. And it was great. Never really thought I had a pathway to aviation, but that's where I ended up. So at about 9 years... working combination patrol, some investigation stuff, doing graffiti and gang work. I put in to go to aviation and I got accepted. So you start as a part-time observer when you go to aviation. And then if you do good there, then you can go to a full-time observer spot. We call them tactical flight officers. That's the technical term, but observers is kind of, everyone kind of understands what that means. So, I got a full-time observer spot and then, 2017, I got a pilot spot. So my agency, they paid for me to get my pilot ratings, get my private and commercial, and finish my career there. Unfortunately, it was when I left, the retirement was not a time of my choosing, but hey, that's not something that I can control. But aviation is something I had a passion for since being a little kid, you know, and again, I didn't think I had a pathway or a way to get there until a buddy of mine called and said, hey, you should think about coming to aviation. And I'm like, man, I thought you had to have, you know, a career in the military or some experience to get you there. But I was wrong. So I put in the work and I made it, which was awesome. So 2020, as COVID struck, looking for things to do outside of work. Listening to podcasts is kind of a pastime of mine, driving back and forth to work. I've got about it, or I had about an hour and a half commute to work. So I'd listen to podcasts to consume the time. I heard a podcast, actually a podcast called The Pilot's Lounge. They're affiliated with Brotalion. I don't know if you're familiar with them or not, but they're mostly military aviation. They're trying to develop a rotorcraft Army Brotherhood through the podcast. They do a really good job. But they interviewed a guy who flew for LA County Sheriffs. He went by the call sign Ghetto Bird, and it was really interesting. Their Super Puma, it's a big twin engine helicopter. He flew that, and he talked about what the career progression looked like to get to that position, and about some of the work they're doing. I'm like, man, this is really interesting. There's got to be some other content like this somewhere. So I looked around and I couldn't find anything. So, you know, again, being that it was COVID, I was like, hey, I'll take a shot at doing this myself. So I started doing the podcast, and I thought it'd be like my mom listening. You know, I didn't know who would listen, but just made the effort. We put a couple episodes out, and it got a lot of traction. So it's really cool to promote our industry. There's no one else doing it right now, unfortunately. But we're doing some really cool stuff in public safety aviation, and being that you've got the training background, it'll be cool to kind of get into, you know, some of the things that law enforcement aviation and public safety aviation has to offer the folks working on the ground that may not be familiar with that. So it's now 2023, and we just released our 100th episode, and it's been awesome. So that's me in a nutshell.
Are you flying now still?
No, so I can't get a FAA medical. You know, I end up having two neck surgeries, and I just don't have the range of motion that I need to get an FAA medical. But going back to what you're saying, you know, I remember the first time that I felt old, I was actually still working patrol, and I had sat some juvenile down, and for whatever the reason was, I knew he was going to be sitting there for a while. So I tried to strike up a conversation with him. We're talking about music, and I'm like, hey, you know, what kind of music do you listen to? And he tells me, I have no idea what he's talking about. And he's like, well, what do you listen to? I was like, Dave Matthews is probably one of my favorite artists. And he looked at me with this puzzled look in his face, and it struck me at that moment. I remember being a kid, and people would say, people's parents would be like, oh, I listen to Kenny G. And I'm like, I have no idea who Kenny G is. But obviously, you know, once you find out, it's this, you know, super bland, you know. So I'm now listening to Kenny G. Like, Dave Matthews in this kid's eyes is Kenny G. I'm like, holy cow, I'm old. You know, it sucks.
I feel fantastic, and I don't hide how old I'm going to be. I'll be 42 next month. I feel great, dude. And I got to tell you, I take a lesson out of the book of my uncle who just turned 99 last month.
Wow.
And who is driving to my house next week, an hour by himself, with his almost brand new tricked out fucking fully loaded Toyota Camry. Dude's legit, bro. Like D-Day Normandy, first wave, three tours in Germany, machine gunner. Wow. One thing he said to me was, I said, you know, what's some of the secrets? He's like, you know, I never acted my age. I never ignored technology. He's got an iPhone.
Yeah.
You can FaceTime him right now. He'll pick up. He'll text you.
That's cool.
He's 99.
Yeah, so, that drive, that continual effort to learn, I think it keeps you sharp, you know? I feel like in my own mind, I'm young, but I get out of bed or stand up. I'm like, nope. I feel that way.
I'm 42 like Dennis. I'm just a little older than you, but I'll tell you what, when you chase 16-year-olds every night or 15-year-olds, you feel every bit of 42 years old when you wake up the next day. That's what it got to me. I was like, I was feeling pretty young in my mind, and that was getting to me. It was my knees when they were creaking in the morning, getting out of mm-hmm. bed with lower back pain every morning. So
I don't get out of bed anymore. I just roll out of bed.
Fall yeah, on the floor, right? Yeah.
John, how old are you? Don't keep everybody in suspense. How old are you?
44.
Oh, dude, please. You're young. Matt, well, tell us about you.
Tell my body that.
Yeah. I'll start what I'm doing right now. So I'm a Illinois State Trooper. I'm a pilot and observer. So we do dual roles. So sometimes I'll fly the plane. Sometimes I'll do the observer in the plane. As opposed to John, we fly fixed wing here. So John's kind of like the helo expert in this conversation. It'd be more the fixed wing guy flying fixed wing aircraft. Have a big history in aviation, which I'll get to. But like you said, I was in the airlines, but I left that to join law enforcement.
Tell us about your history, dude. Give us your, because you started the military flying and then you flew commercial.
I was going to go into the military, but I didn't. So I went to I went to University of Illinois in Champaign, down in Central Illinois, in Champaign, Urbana, and started in the aviation program. I was going into Navy ROTC. was looking at either going to the Navy or the Marine Corps to do aviation, but just, I didn't really feel like I had control of my life going into the military. I wanted to fly planes. I knew I wanted to fly planes, and I knew that there was risk going into the military that I wouldn't be able to fly planes. And the guys that were graduating when I was a freshman, the guys that were seniors graduating, a lot of them wanted to be pilots, but they only knew that there was only a select few spots at that point. It wasn't like these days now where they're struggling to find pilots. They had a glut of applicants and not many spots available. So my choice, my decision, I was like, I'm going to forego the ROTC thing. I'm going to go through civilian flying, find a civilian flying job, and I'm going to try to go and find a military flying job in the International Guard. And once I graduated college, less than a month after I graduated, I got hired at a regional airline flying a small turboprop aircraft here in Chicago, which was an awesome small airline. They flew for ATA. If you remember ATA, you're on vacation back in the day. They flew in and out of Chicago Midway Airport and had the skyline on the tail. And having grown up in Chicago and lived in Chicago my whole life, flying an airplane with the Chicago skyline on the tail was like the best thing in the world to me when I got out of college. Like, that was awesome. So I started doing that. The company wasn't doing well because ATA, the main line, wasn't doing well. And that kind of is a big reason why I left too, because it's a really awesome job, but it's a tough career because when a company goes under, you start at the bottom. Everything is seniority based, and it's not based on your experience levels and things like that. It is to get the job, but once you're there, everything is a number, and you only move as fast as you age and people retire and leave or medically leave. So when that company was kind of looking like things were a little rough, I went to another company. That's where I was based, for Continental Express in Newark, and yeah, I was United, based in Chicago. Right? Yeah, they merged with United right after I left. So I flew for that, but I always had it in my mind that I wanted to do something with service, and I was feeling kind of lackluster in the airlines. Like, I'm going to do this for the next 35 years, and the only thing that's going to change is the type of airplane I fly and how far I fly it. It's all going to look the same in the front. I'm going to wear a white shirt with stuff on the shoulders. It's never going to change. And I wanted more variety, and I wanted to feel like I was doing something a little bit more. And my dad was in federal law enforcement and kind of had a background growing up in the South Side of Chicago around a lot of Chicago police officers. And I was like, this is just something I wanted to do since I was little. And it's funny because my dad actually brought a book over of drawings that I had done when I was 7 years old. And half the book is pictures of police helicopters and SWAT trucks and stuff like that. So I just said, look, since I was 7 years old, 35 years ago, I'm drawing pictures of police helicopters, and now I'm flying police airplanes. So the change point was I became a federal flight deck officer. So that was the pilots who were armed after 9/11. So I could carry a gun in the cockpit for protection of the aircraft, obviously. And when I went to Artesia, New Mexico, for the training for the week, the shooting training, I was just engulfed in all the training that was going on there. There was CBP pilots for customs and border patrol pilots. They were doing all the border patrol training. And I was just like, this is what I need to do. This is awesome. This feels right to me. And I immediately started pursuing the law enforcement career. So I started at a university police department in Chicago. Great people worked there, great area to work. Little Italy was just awesome, but it just didn't have the things that I wanted to do, like canine, SWAT, helicopters, planes, any of that stuff. So I briefly stopped at a municipality that I actually live in right now, which was another awesome police department. But again, I wanted what I'm doing today. So I came to this agency with the Illinois State Police, where I've worked for 10 years now. I joined the aviation unit about a year and a half ago. They brought me in part-time to work the camera because of my experience in aircraft and then my experience being a senior guy on the ground for this team that we support, which I'll talk about a little bit later. But now I'm full-time as a pilot, and I just absolutely love it. I got like 16 years left here, and I don't want to do anything else but this. I love this. I'm super passionate about it. That's why I'm really excited to talk about this stuff today with you guys, because I think it fits in really well with everything that you're talking about, with the changing of law enforcement here, coming out of this wave to defund the police and creating cops who are well-trained, well-educated in case law, and going out there and being proactive. The tool that John and I can talk about is something that will make their lives so much easier and so much safer. So that's kind of where I'm at. So,
I'm sorry, you were also detailed in the interdiction unit, correct?
I was, yeah. And that's kind of, if you don't mind me talking about it, that's kind of where I got started down the path of this stuff with the technology. A big reason why I wanted to go the state police was to do highway interdiction. I took a class with it. Now Sheriff Ron Hain, who was sheriff of the counties, two counties west of Chicago, he actually taught the class when he was just a sheriff's office deputy or whatever on the street doing interdiction on the highway. And I was like, dude, that is awesome. Finding traps in cars, like that's like the ultimate in policing to me, like digging into those cars and unraveling a story and then searching the car and finding those traps. Like that's awesome. So I did that. I got canine pretty quick here at ISP. And then moved to the interdiction team where I did full-time interdiction work for a little over 5 years. And then I moved from there to our statewide anti-violence enforcement team. They call it the SAVE team, which did all like city pursuits, chasing guys wanted for shootings and robberies and stolen cars and carjackings and all that stuff. It was like high level policing in the urban areas, all that stuff. But the interdiction stuff, when I was on the interdiction team, they started giving us license plate reader access. Back in October 2016, I ended up getting a pretty substantial money seizure out of a semi, just under $1 million cash. And one of the things that was vital to that seizure was an LPR hit that basically took the guy's logbook and just dismantled this logbook. It showed he was in Kansas, but the LPR showed him in Arizona. And I was like, okay, your story is garbage. We ran the dog, found the seizure, whatever. And I was like, I just saw the value from that in using the license plate reader technology. So when we got it, I was really excited to start using this as an interdiction tool. When I started developing reasonable suspicion and could start unraveling a story to kind of confirm whether or not their story was valid based on LPR hits. And one day when I started my shift at 8 a.m, when I turned on my computer to go out and work highway interdiction, we had a statewide message that there had been a kidnapping downstate, that a 15-year-old girl had been kidnapped by somebody from California. They had the plate, make, model, and everything in the car. And I was like, you know what? I don't know. Maybe they're going to come to Chicago. They might go west back to California, but we got a lot of cameras up here. I'm going to start trying to see if maybe this car hits up here. I'll find it. And I ended up getting a hit like probably 30 minutes later when I refreshed it. And it actually hit off of a mobile LPR camera affixed to the front of a car in Nebraska, which is an interdiction guy I know who was sitting there doing highway interdiction on I-80. So I called him because I had his number from networking. And I was like, hey, dude, this girl got kidnapped and that car just hit your LPR like 30 minutes ago. Do you guys know anybody west, any troopers that could start looking for this car? And he goes, yeah, I'll make phone calls. I call my dispatch, let them know. Long story short, they find the car abandoned in a, it's empty in a rest area in Nebraska off I-80. And the troopers go inside and this 15-year-old is being sexually assaulted by this 43-year-old, like severe offender, like,
wow,
tons of felony crimes, burglary, homicide, blah, blah, blah. The dude had meth on his person, all this. And that was the third time that she had been sexually assaulted in Nebraska alone. So, wow. I mean, he's talking Illinois, Iowa, Nebraska, and then just in that, just there alone. So that event right there was like the solid one that was like, all right, this is awesome, because we just, God knows what could have happened to that girl, right? Without that technology. And you know, some people would be like, well, if this is an interdiction guy, how come you didn't see it? I'm like, it could be this easy as, hey, I got a text from the wife. Yeah, I'll be home for dinner. And that car goes by, you know? So I'm a huge proponent for proactive guys going out there and using their eyes to work and making traffic stops. But the technology with these camera systems, surveillance cameras, and then aircraft, just is such a great tool to supplement hardworking people going out there using the stuff that you guys are training about, going and doing criminal interdiction stuff or the city stuff that you guys do, like the gun game, all that stuff about going in, getting out of the car, walking and talking to people. And then when you're doing it, supplementing it with the stuff we have to offer with the technology, it's just, it'll completely change law enforcement, in my opinion. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
When you combine that with like the real-time crime center stuff that's coming up, what we can do in aviation is amazing. You know, there was a lot of times where our adjoining cities, we had LPR readers as well. And a lot of our adjoining cities did. We'd have a stolen or some sort of crime would take place. And we could track the vehicle's location just through the LPR plates. And being that we're airborne, or if we were airborne, we could literally find that car moving, you know, with a pretty high success rate. So yeah, just the LPR technology by itself, I think, is a great investigative tool. And for us in aviation, it's armed us with a proactive tool that we can use to find folks. Is you know, we're flying around, we're using our eyes to look for things, just like when you're on the ground, that stand out as abnormal. And a lot of these folks that have committed crimes, as soon as they get out of the immediate area where the crime is committed, they start driving like nothing, like it's Sunday morning. So if outside of knowing this person committed a crime, it's difficult to locate these vehicles. But that's where when the LPR technology steps in, and you could say, hey, it's a, you know, it comes back to this car. It, you know, it's registered at this location. We have the ability to get places quick. So it's super helpful in locating stuff like that.
So Matt, tell me about how you guys are employing aviations in modern day policing.
Yeah, so it was about maybe 2.5 years ago, they started using the aircraft to try to supplement for the carjacking details. So obviously, I mean, it's no secret that the crime's pretty out of control here in the Chicagoland area and just in the state in general. I mean, in the country in general, right? But what's awesome about the agency I work for is they're taking a really proactive stance to try to curb it. I know there's this misnomer when you start looking at Instagram and Facebook that policing is dead in Chicago. It's the complete opposite from my personal experience. We're out there every single night getting in vehicle pursuits, getting armed offenders, carjacking, shootings, homicides, stolen vehicles, all this stuff off the street. And the big thing that we're doing is utilizing like the LPR technology to locate these vehicles that have been identified in serious felony crimes and then using the aircraft to track it. So it started with guys on the ground would locate get an LPR hit. And then the various LPRs on our interstates or around the city. And then they would position themselves based on those hits to try to intercept the vehicle. And then when they're behind it, knowing that we, A, have strict pursuit policies, but even if you can pursue, it's really in an urban area, it's so unsafe the way these guys drive to even attempt to pursue. So it's so much safer on the officer for us to be in the camera in the air to follow that vehicle so they can back off and check their intersections and slow down at their red lights when these guys are going right through it. And like John said, when you're out of view, they return to normal because they want to blend back in and go back covert and try to hide and get their way out. They slow down and kind of like stop driving like idiots, basically. So we would start employing the aircraft and detailing them out for, let's say there's an 8-hour shift, they try to get the plane up for 5 hours or so to be available, that when they're identifying cars either they know are wanted or cars that they would say, hey, this looks really good and this thing's probably going to take off on me. Can you guys get eyes on before I activate my lights just in case it flees? Because then we could follow them on the camera. Just a simple fleeing vehicle is not something we could chase for. But obviously, if they're fleeing, they're fleeing for a reason. So we would follow that car until they park somewhere, get out, start walking, get out, start running. And then we would dispatch our officers to that area to take that individual and detain them or take them into custody. It's also awesome, too, because now when they throw things out of the car, we see that item get thrown out of the car in the infrared camera because we see it. If it's the gun in their waistband, it's absorbed all their body heat. When they throw it out of the car, we see it go flying out of the car. So even during sometimes pursuits where there's an officer right on their tail, as soon as they turn that corner, they'll throw it out the window where that officer's blocked simply by vehicles or a building or a fence or something. It wouldn't see that evidence getting tossed from the car. So where they're available to do it. And then, you know, because it's all recorded, everything that we have on the cam is recorded. All that recording gets sent to court. So it's just continuity between the vehicle fleeing the stop, the evidence getting thrown from the car, the individual getting out, and then the officers arriving and taking him into custody. So there's no question that that person was the one in the driver's seat because we watched them get out. We recorded them get out and we recorded them getting into custody. And you saw that object that was later identified as a weapon get tossed from the car. And we marked the location where it happened so they could photograph it, put it all together in a nice package for that court case. So it's getting to the point where the guys on the ground, I mean, they've openly said it in news reports when they've had details about some of the carjackings in Chicago, that they almost feel like they can't operate without air support anymore, because when air support's up, they have to let a lot of stuff go that they know is dirty. So it's hard to do.
Yeah, John. I just want to touch on something you brought up with the camera work. If you're following an officer who's in foot pursuit of a suspect and you see that suspect ditch either a gun or dope or whatever the thing is that he ditches, this camera, the mapping systems that we have are so advanced that you can actually drop, As you're following this suspect on the camera, you can drop a marker, and then when the foot pursuit's over, you can go back to where that marker is, and you can walk the officer back in to where that whatever that thing was that was dumped, you're not spending hours upon hours looking for whatever the thing was that may or may not have been, you know, critical to what you're doing. So it's, you know, one, it's efficient because it's allowing us to not waste time on things that we would have otherwise waste time on, but it's just a really cool tool. And the advancement of that stuff is absolutely amazing.
How often does somebody know that a helicopter is following them?
Well, that's a good question. I feel like there's a big difference between helicopter operations and airplane operations. If you've got a suspect who's at all knowledgeable in what we're doing, obviously they're going to notice a helicopter following them, even from our surveillance altitudes. Whereas an airplane, you guys, you know, you're typically flying at a much higher altitude, and you guys have the ability to go undetected almost, you know, I'd say almost all the time. So it's a good question. And that's one of the reasons why fixed wing aviation is much better for surveillance type operations than helicopters.
Yeah, John's the Hilo guy here is talking about the helicopter stuff, but we do have helicopters here, not at my agency, but we employ them in Chicago because the Chicago police has them. And then the federal agencies will assist us as well on these details with the helicopters, and the bad guys can hear it. I mean, you can just imagine sitting in your living room sometimes and these EMS helicopters will fly over. Everybody looks up when a helicopter flies over because A, you don't see them very often, and B, they're loud, and then you're just kind of interested in it. So even somebody who's not airplane interested, us dork pilots will always look up at every airplane that flies over, right? But particularly helicopters. So the bad guys can know it. And then from having been on the ground in a squad car, even with the windows closed, I could hear the helicopter arriving overhead. So there was times when I'm waiting for air support and I would hear the helo blades and I'd know the air support was imminent. So I could kind of start preparing myself to activate my lights and make that stop. So I always say that there's two different things. The fixed wing plane provides a covert advantage for surveillance capabilities and for following these vehicles. Cause once they get away from the ground units, they don't know we're there. And I'm not going to give away any trade secrets, but they don't know we're there. And their driving behaviors change. When the helos are assisting us, you can sometimes see that the driving behaviors don't change because they're almost trying to outrun the helicopter at that point because they know it's on them. But they still can't usually get away from the helicopter, to be honest. But the helicopter provides a distinct advantage in an overt capacity where now if there's an offender, he knows the helicopter is over, his behaviors change because he's worried about not only the ground guys, but now he's worried about that helicopter as well. So he's diverting his attention between the two. Whereas with the airplane, since he doesn't even know we're there, he's kind of only focusing on the ground units, the guys and girls on the ground. So
yeah, the idea that suspects run until they're confronted comes into play when you've got a helicopter. Yeah, a lot of times the audible confrontation that we're providing beds these suspects down. And once we can get a good perimeter set up and a search team in place, I think odds are more often than not, we're finding those suspects within that perimeter. You know, just by that audible confrontation that we provide the helicopter.
Hey guys, if you missed out on the last conference in Nashville, Tennessee, you don't want to miss out on the next one. It's April 28th through May 3rd, Orlando, Florida, the Gaylord Palms Resort and Convention Center. You made a mistake missing the last one. You don't want that to happen again on this one. 5 days of some of the best training you're ever going to experience packed into one event. We have an early bird special right now, $50 off. Use 24 early bird on our website, streetcop.com. Look for the conference, click the link, register today. If you want to get significantly better at this profession in 5 days, don't dare miss out on the 2024 Street Cop Conference.
Yeah, to provide an example of that, we had an incident, it was probably like a year ago. It was in a rural area downstate, because obviously we're talking, I'm up in Chicago area, so I'm talking a lot about Chicago, but our aviation unit covers the entire state of Illinois. So we do a lot of rural stuff downstate. The guys downstate get called for a lot of like rural manhunts because there's a lot of places to hide in the city. There's not a lot of places to hide in a cornfield or in a little forested area and stuff like that. So the aircraft down there provides such an outstanding resource for those guys downstate in the rural areas for these searches and pursuits and things like that on the country roads. It's just fantastic. But we had a search downstate. It was actually a guy who just got released from federal prison and was on an Amtrak. And on his way back to Chicago, after getting released from prison, he sexually assaulted a minor on the train. The conductor got alerted to it. So he bailed off the train and was in the cornfields. So a manhunt was established. He was hiding somewhere. They suspended the manhunt. And then he came out in the morning to go get something to drink at the gas station. So they called and boom, manhunt now reestablished. So we were airborne and can get kind of like a picture of where this area is. We're doing a search, but we were out there for 8 hours with a helicopter and a fixed wing. And we stayed out till dark and we finally were like, we're done, but they kept the perimeter. And this guy came out like an hour later and was like, I can't do this anymore. I'm getting eaten alive by bugs. I know you guys are looking for me. I'm just done. And he refused to leave that one position for like 10 hours and was just getting eaten alive by bugs because we kept him bedded down for that long. So he ended up surrendering himself to law enforcement because the aircraft was there, just the simple presence of the aircraft being there. So
let's talk about some of the pros and cons of, you know, a helicopter versus a fixed wing. And maybe just to give a little context, helicopters generally can be put up in the air pretty quickly. Can a fixed wing get up quickly as well when called upon?
Yeah, we get airborne pretty quickly. I mean, it where we're located, I mean, we can't be overhead in 5 minutes, but we can be overhead pretty quickly. It just depends on availability and stuff. I found that for our mission here, the fixed wing, a big limiting factor is the weather, especially in the wintertime when it's those low overcast days coming up, the winds off the lake in the city, and it's just cloudy and stuff like that. Because we have limits of where we can fly because we have to fly at higher altitude, which provides that covert advantage. But if it's cloudy, then we're stuck, you know, and that's where the helicopters usually are up when it's a little bit more cloudy and stuff like that. And John could talk about that more about that with the helicopters, but it's more just the weather factor. But I think that we both probably can get airborne in the same amount of time because we both have to do a pre-flight. You know, we both have to launch off and stuff like that, working ourselves with air traffic in the area. So,
yeah, I feel like the patrol guys, there's kind of a misconception that we can get off the ground. I think it's the same as hopping in a car and starting the car and going. It's not. You talked about the pre-flight. You got to do walk around. You got to check your fluids. And there's a whole start procedure that goes into place. And so I think for us, it was about 3.5 minutes it took for us to get off the ground and then flight time to wherever we're going. So, you know, from that standpoint, we can get from A to B quick if we're airborne, but if we're on the ground, we're playing catch up at that point.
Three and a half minutes, 4 minutes is pretty quick to get up in the air.
Yeah, but I guess when you think of, if you've got an officer in foot pursuit, if you think of how quickly a suspect can make it through a city block, 3.5 minutes is a whole day, you know, the difference between catching somebody and not. So, you know, going to proactive patrol flights for us, you know, that's where the bread and butter of what we do is made. When in patrol, you know, you get a call, by the time you receive the call and drive to wherever the call's taking place, if it's a domestic violence call, for example, most of the time the involved parties are gone. If both aren't gone, the one that's remaining is obviously the victim, and the suspect's long gone. In aviation, these patrol flights, you get the call and you're literally overhead automatically, and you can see the fight still happening, you know, with the camera system, or you catch the suspect fleeing the area. Like, just really a really unique way to see policing from the helicopter standpoint, because you're seeing crimes happen fresh, you know. I know the airplanes doing the same thing.
Yeah, and some of these cars that'll pop up on these LPR systems, sometimes when they're used in very serious crimes, like these homicides or shooting, they'll disappear for like a month. And then all of a sudden they'll pop up and you'll get an alert, car wanted for an interstate shooting or car wanted for a homicide in the city. And you might never see that car again. So being airborne and being available for that instantaneous response for that, like John said, proactive, like overflight, rather than, hey, this car for homicide's hitting, can you guys come out? Yeah, we'll be overhead in 15, 20 minutes or whatever. It's better when it's just like, hey, where are you guys at? We'll be there in 3 minutes. Stay on that car, keep eyes on it covertly, keep a distance. We'll be there in 3 minutes. And then you could back off and we'll follow that car. We'll get the evidence that's in it. If they throw it out, we'll get any bodies that are in it, and we'll get the car itself without having to chase it. So
when you guys have to launch, are you getting like priority from air traffic control?
For us, we're flying out of an uncontrolled airport. So we're not having to answer to ATC, but that's almost, I think in our case, it's almost more dangerous sometimes because you got pilots who are, may or may not be using radios and may or may not be paying attention. So for us, you know, that's definitely a concern versus, I'm assuming you guys are flying out of a towered airport.
Yeah, we fly out of a towered airport. They're really good to us where they know if we need to get off the ground, there's a lot of flight training, things like that. They're going on here and even some corporate traffic in and out. If we say, hey, we need to get off quick, priority, they said, yep. And then they'll kind of give us a little bit different taxi instructions to get to the runway faster than others. But in terms of the main area that we work, where a lot of the stuff is going on is in Chicago, and that's a busy airspace. That's a, they can call it a class B, class Bravo airspace. And then Chicago Midway's right there. And what they do is they wedge us in between Midway arrivals and departures and Chicago O'Hare arrivals and departures. And we float right in between those two, kind of floating around the city. But sometimes we can be restricted to where we go. So they have to move us higher or lower, things like that. So it can be not only you're trying to get off the ground around other traffic at the airport, but then you're trying to wedge yourself in with Dennis trying to fly into Chicago to teach a class, right? Like on his 787 Dreamliner or something like that. So it can be pretty difficult sometimes. So that's why it's nice when we're actually up and doing patrol. But again, we can't be up all the time because it comes down to maintenance hours and then staffing. You know, we're having trouble finding people like everybody is right now. So limited number of ground personnel means limited number of pilots as well. So,
Matt, what kind of aircraft are you running? Like, what's the model? If you can paint a context for people, what does it look like? What's the size of it?
It's a high wing Cessna single engine prop aircraft. So we fly a Cessna 182, and then we're taking delivery in probably exactly a year from now of a little bit larger aircraft. It's called a Cessna 206. So it's a little bit wider, a little bit larger, has a little bit bigger engine in it and stuff, so we can fly at higher altitudes. But we're more excited than anything about getting some new camera systems, because I know John's had a lot of guests on his podcast talking about these new camera technologies, and a lot of the technologies are coming out. We have some pretty old aircraft because this is pretty new, right? Like utilizing the aircraft in the manner they're being used here. This is kind of been going on for a while in some states like Florida or Texas, and a lot like California, where John's from. You know, they use aircraft a ton. LA's got like, I don't know, 18 aircraft or something like that. They have guys up 24/7. It wasn't big here, and it's become a lot bigger, and it's great that it has. So we're replacing some of the older technology with new stuff and new cameras that have some really high definition video systems in it and stuff. So we use the high wing aircraft so that we can look out the window. When I'm flying the airplane, I'm diverting my attention between the altitude and my instruments and, you know, maintaining stuff very precisely, and then looking down at the car. So I'll be watching that car driving up and down the interstate or cutting in and out and stuff like that. And I'll be telling the observer, the gen called the tactical flight officer who's operating the camera, hey, they cut their lights off, or, you know, hey, they cut their lights back on, or hey, they're parking over here. And we kind of work together as a crew to stay on that car and give each other updates. So, but that's the advantage of that high wing allows me to look out the window. I'm literally watching this car driving all over the city out the window. So,
yeah, there's the technology that surrounds the camera systems is pretty amazing. It's allowed us to operate, you know, from an aircraft standpoint, much safer. When folks weren't using camera systems, they were flying a lot lower in a helicopter, flying 500, 800 feet AGL off the ground, just using your eyes or binoculars. And now that people are using camera systems, it's pretty common to have flight altitudes of 1500 feet on a normal patrol flight. And that just was something that wasn't common before. So from a pilot standpoint, it gives you a lot more time to address an emergency issue that might pop up. And then from a covert standpoint, I mean, not that we're entirely covert, but it does change the noise signature on the ground when you're at 1500 versus 500 feet. And then the other thing that pops up too is the noise complaints from the citizens in the areas that you're serving. If you're flying at 500 feet all the time, you're shaking their house, you know? So flying at 1500 feet versus 500 offers you a lot of advantages. And the camera system is kind of the backbone and all that. You have the infrared camera systems and the color camera systems, and their standoff distance is anywhere from 3 to 5 miles. So, you know, we could be going to a call and be 5 miles away and have eyes on the call, you know, looking for vehicles that are fleeing or looking for information that we can give to the ground units as they respond in and help them kind of figure out where the targets might be. So it's been really cool to see that technology advance. Just in the 10 plus years that I've been in aviation, you've seen the thermal imagery advance to where when you first saw it, you're looking almost at like a white blob as a blob of heat. And now the thermography is so advanced that you can actually, you know, pick out what somebody's wearing, whether it's jeans or shorts or a t-shirt versus long sleeve shirt, jackets and hats, all the stuff that's super identifiable, which is helpful when you're trying to walk someone into a suspect, right? So that technology has been really, really cool and super helpful for us.
I'll tell you too, with these cameras, you know, why I'm excited to get the new one is right now at night, we have trouble seeing sometimes colors and things like that because of the darkness. But these new cameras with the street lights, because of how bright the city lights are, we can get color, make and model on these cars. So when I was talking earlier about these license plate reader systems, historically, it's been that the ground guys will go looking for that car based on where it's hitting. But we've had it now where we find that car and then we give it to them. So I like to call it almost airborne criminal interdiction, you know, because I'm like an interdiction guy, right? Like you're picking off cars. That was my bread and butter before on the ground. Now I'm trying to do the same thing in the air, where if I'm getting hits and saying this car is here and now it's here, I start looking ahead of that based on those hits, knowing maybe they're 5-10 seconds delay. And I start trying to pick off that car. And then you can zoom in and say, yep, that's a red Dodge Charger. It's got a white Uber sticker in the back window, and say, hey, guys, I think I have your car, you know, and then pass them the information. That way these guys aren't running around like crazy, driving like crazy, trying to find these cars. You know, we can find it for them and give it to them. So without the color technology, I actually try to use a lot of stuff I learned on the road about driving behaviors. You know, when you're doing criminal interdiction on a highway, you're looking for that car that slows down and moves over a lane. Here you're moving, looking for those cars that are bright, white, hot, like bright, white hot, because they've been running so hard and they've been driving like crazy, doing robberies or carjackings or whatever. And just, you could see behaviors like those slowly roll up to a light and then they'll blow the light. And you can see these different behaviors these guys exhibit, the way that they're cruising around the city. It's completely different than everybody else that's driving like normal. So it's kind of cool taking the ground stuff you learn and like all the stuff we talk about with your training and learning criminal behaviors and translating it through a camera. That's why this is awesome, because we can literally float over the city and start picking these guys off and hand them to the ground units. So
what are the pros? Obviously, we're talking about the pros and cons of the fixed wing versus the helicopter. Discuss some things. Is there a cost difference between the two to operate a fixed wing versus a helicopter? And maybe the acquisition of the unit as well?
Yeah, dramatic difference in cost. Yeah. You know, helicopters, you're looking at $2,000 an hour, you know, on the cheap side to operate an A-Star helicopter, which is kind of the go-to police helicopter, at least on the West Coast. Versus a fixed wing aircraft, you're looking at, you know, maybe a third the price of, you know, to operate. And maybe Matt, you can elaborate on that a little bit.
Yeah, the cost saving, there's definitive cost savings for that in terms of the acquisition is a big one. So because we're acquiring these new aircraft, each new aircraft, because we're getting three of them, was $3.5 million a piece, and that was coming fully equipped. So it was like $2 million for the actual aircraft. And then about $1.5 million of all the technology that we're putting into the aircraft for us. You know, helicopters vary. There are some cheaper at $4 to $5 million, but then you can go upwards of $12 million. I think New Mexico State Police just bought an Airbus H-145 helicopter and actually decked it out for a lot of the search and rescue hoist operations they're doing. And that thing cost $12 million. I mean, it's a gorgeous helicopter, but that was a lot of money. And I think it just depends on what the utility of the helicopter is being used for, right? Because you have states like Texas, Arizona, New Mexico, California that are doing hoist operations, search and rescue, things like that. We're not doing that in the fixed wing, obviously. So a lot of the costs that come lower too is because you don't need to attach all that gear onto it. So
let me ask you this. Would it be reasonable for an agency to even consider an aviation program knowing that there's a fixed wing option? Because it becomes just so much more like possible, because we can look at an aircraft and say, hey, look, $400,000 or $500,000, we can get ourselves into a used aircraft, equip it for another $200,000. Even if we take the old one from you guys, mm-hmm. if you're going to sell it to another agency and, you know, put somebody up there part-time or available at least for something like that.
I'd say absolutely. Mm-hmm. I think one of the first things you want to consider if you're looking at developing an aviation unit is defining the mission. Is your mission one that requires a helicopter? Well, if it is, then an airplane's out of the question. But if you're looking for something to operate in patrol and to operate in the kind of the manner we've talked about, then absolutely an aircraft, a fixed wing aircraft would be a potential solution for that. You know, and you might get into the program and find out 2 years down the road that you need a helicopter for whatever the reason is. But if the cost of operating that and purchasing that helicopter is your barrier to entry and you can get into a fixed wing aircraft at a much cheaper rate, then absolutely you should. So that's my take.
I'm going to make a pretty bold statement here and say that as we're moving forward, like I said, coming out of the post-pandemic, post-defund the police area and moving into this new era of law enforcement, anybody that thinks the old, we can go back right to the old era, I think is a misnomer, right? I know you had Corey Flowers on a podcast recently. I listened to it. He said he's pretty excited because he thinks law enforcement is changing, but it's changing in a good way. I think it is too. I think every major municipality in the entire United States should have both a fixed wing and a rotor wing option to have airborne law enforcement over that city. For all the violent crime and stuff like that, it makes it so much safer for those officers on the ground. But for those smaller municipalities and things like that, I think going the fixed wing would be phenomenal because it gives you everything that you need at a lower cost. But also, if you got multiple municipalities or sheriff's offices, they almost need to create like a joint venture together to create like a joint aviation unit. And that way you can pick off different officers from different agencies and fulfill that aviation, you know, almost like a joint task force in terms of aviation, where if you got a bunch of cities in central Illinois and they all want to piece together, you know, hopefully they call us if it's central Illinois, the state police, you know, but if they were trying to create their own unit, and you have a bunch of suburban towns around a major city that don't necessarily get the aircraft from the city because it's so busy in that major municipality, those smaller ones on the outskirts can combine forces and buy a fixed wing option that covers all of them together so they can go from one town to the other.
How much training would somebody need in for a fixed wing aircraft versus a helicopter as far as getting licensed and having the ability to operate the machine?
For our agency, and most, I think most agencies, the insurance that you have to carry to be a pilot requires 500 hours of turbine time, or actually it's just pilot in command. So that's what we're seeing on the helicopter side. I'm not sure if on the fixed wing side, you're seeing different numbers, but I think it usually comes down to whatever the insurance company that you have coverage for asks for, you know, on that side. Are you guys seeing different numbers on the fixed wing side?
Yeah, at least for my agency, we require you to have a commercial pilot certificate with an instrument rating, and you need to have a minimum of 250 hours for that. So all of our pilots have over that number. Some came in with only a private pilot and maybe an instrument rating, and then they get the commercial once they're here. I think it's been quite a while since we've trained somebody from zero time all the way through for quite a while. But I don't know, that might change now because it's tough to find pilots anywhere, right? It's tough to find airline pilots. You got guys going to the airlines left and right, and different jobs all across the country in different aspects of aviation. So the pilot shortage is affecting the aviation sector and law enforcement as well. So for the fixed wing, like I said, you only need 250 hours to technically get paid to fly the aircraft as a commercial pilot. So
how have drones impacted law enforcement in comparison to the helicopters and the fixed wing aircraft?
I'm actually really excited to see drones and the tools that they offer and provide for folks on the ground. I think the drones are limited. It's not a replacement for what we're doing, but it's a great supplement. And it's also, again, going back to the agency that doesn't have any kind of aviation asset, that might be a good starting place for somebody. You know, once you sit in an airplane or a helicopter and you see, you know, what it takes to do the job, you realize that you're pretty limited by operating a drone and your field of view and all the tools that you need to safely follow a vehicle off or, you know, effectively follow a pursuit, just couldn't do that. But, you know, for the barricaded subject on a call where your aviation unit, if you've got a helicopter, you're having them orbit overhead for hours upon hours, you know, again, $2,000 an hour. Now you can take this drone and park four drones on each corner of the house and have continual obs of each side at a, you know, pennies on the dollar. So from a cost perspective, it's great. The camera systems are improving on those drone systems. So yeah, I think it's going to be a really cool supplement to aviation. And again, getting folks that may not have access otherwise because of monetary reasons, some sort of aerial asset. So yeah, I think it's great.
Yeah, absolutely. It's awesome. I was just having a conversation with somebody locally about the drones yesterday. And I said, it's definitely not a replacement right now, but it's a great supplement. There's some distinct advantages to having a drone on scene when we're in the airplane, because there's times when maybe can see some heat signature and we can't definitively say it's a person or not, but that drone can get low and kind of get in some areas that we can't, and they can do that low hover and stuff like that, you know, where they can go under some trees or go in. And I even read an article yesterday from the Airborne Public Safety Association, sent out an email with some updates and stuff. There's some smaller drones that actually fly in houses. So Our SWAT team utilizes drones to do pre-clears on residences before they do search warrants. So instead of sending all those guys in to clear those rooms, they'll pre-clear with the drone and fly it around just like they were using the robots. But the robots, sometimes those throw robots would come upon stairs or a bunch of garbage on the floor, and they couldn't operate in and out of some of these tight areas or stairwells and whatnot. But you can fly that drone up and down all the stairs and pre-clear a residence and see whether or not that individual is barricaded inside. We just had a barricaded incident where the shots were fired at the police about 2 weeks ago, and we were overhead for about 2 hours. And then a SWAT head went in there and found the individual deceased from a self-inflicted gunshot wound. That could have been something that a drone could have found before that team had to go in like that and mobilize and go in and risk themselves, you know, by flying a drone in that house to see if that was the case or not. So I love the drones, but yeah, the battery life and things like that, it's just not there right now. It definitely cannot keep up with a pursuit. I mean, we're following cars that are going 135 miles an hour. There's times that we even have difficulty keeping up. There's no way a drone's going to do it. So.
And the federal regulations are really prohibitive for a lot of agencies wanting to use drones in that fashion as well. So as the regulatory side catches up with operational side, it might get a little better. I imagine it will, but most agencies are using what they call line of sight operations with the drones. So you have to maintain visual obs on that drone at all times. So if it's out of visual sight, then there's a whole different set of regulations that come in and different training that has to be put in place. But yeah, it's going to, I think, revolutionize agencies' access to aviation and the assets that come from, you know, the drone side. So I think it's going to be great.
You know, I think any more questions that I have will be self-interested because I have such interest in learning more about flying. So I'll just call you, Matt, on your cell phone.
Yeah.
With that being said, where can people find you guys? Maybe you can give them some assistance and some ideas on how to start a program, things that, you know, you guys are obviously the experts in the field amongst many other ones as well. But I know that we did this podcast with the intention of revealing to the law enforcement and the public the idea that this stuff is more reasonable to make happen than you think. So where can people find you guys? Obviously, the Hangar Z podcast, but where else?
Yeah, so for us, Hangar Z podcast on social media, hangarzpodcast@gmail.com. You can get in touch with me if you have questions that need to be answered, not know the answer. I'll find someone that has the answer for you. So, you know, we're always willing to help folks out, especially as they start these programs. We never want someone to have to reinvent the wheel. It's been done before. So our hope is to be able to step in and at least direct some resources to you so you're not trying to figure it out on your own. So that's contact info for me, and I'll hand it over to you.
Yeah, actually, when I told some people I was going on a podcast, they said, well, you better create a LinkedIn, because I'm not a big social media guy. I have a couple friends on there and stuff, but I don't go on it all the time. So I created a LinkedIn account. So if you just type in my name and you'll see me flying an airplane, a picture on there, and just connect with me there and send me a message and ask any questions. I thought that'd be a great way to interact with others in the profession that are interested in this stuff and discussing ways and, you know, talk about different technologies and things like that that can be used to try to arrest some of these criminal offenders, you know, safely. So there was one more thing I wanted to tell you too, because I think that you might find this interesting, Dennis, about some of this technology stuff. We actually have a thing on there. It's an infrared laser. I know John and I had a conversation about this the other day. We were talking about it. So one of the things I did here, I was pushing really hard after I went to a conference. They had all the vendors there trying to sell their stuff. And they had a guy with a ballistic helmet that had night vision and handheld FLIR devices attached to it, which, me being a canine handler, was interesting because I don't like going into the woods with a flashlight and revealing my position to somebody that might be armed in the woods, you know, trying to kill me and say, here I come, look at me. So I pushed for years to try to get this, and kudos to my agency for actually doing it and getting that for me. They got me a handheld night vision and a handheld FLIR device so that we could utilize it to locate offenders on the ground. Because now, from the aircraft perspective, if I'm sending a guy to, or a gal to investigate something, a heat signature is possibly a person, I'd rather them not walk up with a flashlight. I've seen guys on camera literally almost trip over an offender hiding in the brush trying to locate them with flashlights, which is scary as hell to me to watch, right? So getting this these devices, and they're buying more of them. But we actually have an infrared laser attached to our camera, where if you have night vision, I can literally pull a trigger and point this invisible laser where the offender wouldn't know that it's hitting them, and point it at the offender hiding in the brush. And all the officers on the ground, if they're equipped with night vision, can walk in quietly and just start making announcements with a canine. Come out now, we see you. And now you're definitely in this individual's OODA loop, right? Because they can't see you. They're in the dark, but they just know that they're surrounded. And what are they going to do, right? They're going to give up because they got no choices at that point. Because what are they going to do? Shoot blindly into the darkness, you know, in a circle. So this stuff is I'm super passionate about it. I'd love to talk to more people about it if they're interested in these types of things, about how the aircraft and these other technologies, whether it's night vision or LPR, can help increase our safety. So you've had some heavy hitters on both your podcasts. So I really appreciate you guys just taking the Southside guy from Chicago to talk about airplanes today. It was pretty awesome. So
I had a blast, dude. I enjoyed it. I knew it was going to be good as soon as I met John, or I knew you, Matt. And so if you want to find Matt on LinkedIn, his last name is spelled S-Z-L-U-K-A. I like how you just assume that people could spell Zulka.
Yeah.
Anybody else is some like Eastern European.
Right.
Anyway, guys, I appreciate it tremendously. John, you got anything else?
No, just one more point on what he's talking about, the IR lasers. You know, radio discipline is something we talk about a lot. And if from an aircrew standpoint, if you're walking an officer in without using an IR designator or IR laser, you're having to walk them in using your voice. And if they don't have an earplug in, they're not, you know, able to kind of suppress the audio from their mic, that suspect's hearing that officer's audio come out. So with these lasers, it's really cool because the radio discipline, it goes up tenfold. You know, if as long as no one else is broadcasting, you can literally be radio silent and you can direct an officer to where that laser's pointing. So yeah, there's tons of stuff that we're implementing that's making ground tactics safer and more efficient. So yeah, like him, I'm just super passionate about what we're doing and what we offer, not just law enforcement, but you know, fire, EMS, the broader governmental agencies as a whole. It's been really neat to talk about that. So thanks for having us on the podcast, and yeah, look forward to hearing from some of your listeners.
Yeah. And from us too, like I said, thanks for having me on, but anybody out there that's looking to be the police, turn off social media and stop listening to what's being said about Chicago. We are doing the police thing. You can come fly airplanes. You can use IR lasers and canines and pursue and pit and everything. We need good people to do this stuff because I grew up in the city. I've lived here for 42 years. This is an awesome, diverse city with a lot to offer. We've already talked about the different food, right? The cuisine and everything that's available here. I don't want to see this place get destroyed any more than I want to see New York or New Jersey get destroyed or California get destroyed. So, I think law enforcement, like you said, is changing. Technology is helping us. The training like you're providing is helping us. I think this is on an upswing, and people need to stop turning a blind eye to law enforcement and think about this as a career. This, you can do a lot of really cool stuff in this job still.
Yeah.
You know, if you turn off social media and turn off Facebook and all the talking heads, you can come out here and do some seriously good work and help a lot of really good people that deserve it. So
on the training side, are you guys, are you guys offering any training that talks about how to work with aviation units or employing any of the technology that we're talking about?
We don't, because we don't have somebody who's an expert on that who has come forward and looking to be an instructor. And mm-hmm. I think that some of the struggle might be who actually has helicopters. There's probably 5 in the entire state of New Jersey. I know Newark has one, and I don't think anybody else has one except the state police. And they're generally, most of the time, they do a lot of law enforcement work too, but I think a lot of it's medevac. So, you know, LZs are important. They give you a brief overview, and it's pretty, setting up an LZ is pretty easy as a cop. You know, as long as you get the little context of how it's supposed to go, it's pretty simple. I think that they're just not used here as much as they are probably on the West Coast and the Midwest. And so that's what some of this conversation was about, is to really get some into the right ears, maybe, of why it's important to have these things. And people, you think about, like, you don't want to have pursuits because they're dangerous and they kill people. Well, cool. So instead of paying out a $1.7 million lawsuit or having to fight a lawsuit, because there's obviously case law for it to have immunity against those lawsuits, you know, just spend the money up front. But this is, again, the rub of law enforcement, right? Wait till it really goes bad and then do something about it, not try to fix the problem before it occurs. I mean, you could foresee 1,000 problems. The question is, why haven't we, you know, essentially taken the initiative to stop these problems before, or prevent these problems before they occur? And that's where we come in as a company, to give advice and guidance to those who are in the field who are like, well, we don't know how to solve it. That's fine. Just listen to us and have an open mind to it, and this might resolve a lot of your problems.
Yeah. What's interesting from a liability standpoint, a lethal force encounter could cost a department in excess of what it would cost to buy an aircraft and operate an aviation program. And you can't, it's hard to say, you know, if we'd had an aircraft over this, this would or would not have happened, but it's pretty safe, you know, based on what we're seeing in the field to say that the operations that we're a part of are saving departments huge amounts of money when it comes to liability. And then have someone overhead of a scene with a very unique perspective on what's happening on the ground to quarterback and use all this technology to make what the officers are doing on the ground much safer. Man, it changes the game from a safety standpoint and an efficiency standpoint from my perspective.
Well, listen, guys, it was great to have you. And I usually, most podcasts, thank you so much for being here. And I have to urinate so badly.
Cheers.
Thanks for having us. We'll see you later. Thanks.
Okay, Matt, I'll talk to you soon. John, it's a real pleasure. Thank you.
All right. See you guys.
Hey guys, check out our upcoming training at StreetCop.com. Don't forget, we have 50 instructors nationally teaching a variety of topics. These are the best classes you're going to experience in your career. We make sure of it. You're going to love it. I guarantee you, you're going to be thankful that you went. Check us out at StreetCop.com for all upcoming classes in your area.